Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. I'm not sure if it's a good idea for me to admit this or not, but Halloween is not my favorite holiday. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not interested in turning any of the fans of this podcast into haters, which includes my husband, who's a hardcore Halloween fanatic. I love decorating for fall, which is kind of funny when I live in the desert. In the Phoenix area, the leaves stay green year-round, and we have to drive to northern Arizona just to find and enjoy fall leaves. But I do love decorating with leaves and pumpkins and nuts and squirrels. My husband, on the other hand, has hijacked the entire month of October, and he's decked out the house with bats and skeletons and black cobwebs and, of course, everything Michael Myers. He's obsessed with the Halloween movie franchise. Should I be worried? This year, though, I like Halloween just a little bit more because I discovered something that I never knew. In tracing the spooky holiday's origins, I learned that it's based on astronomical timing, and it's something that's called cross-quarter days. And if you've never heard of it, don't worry, it's new to me too. In this episode, we're gonna go back in time and find out about Halloween's celestial origins. Halloween's roots go back to the Celts more than 2,000 years ago, although even those traditions go back another couple thousand years to other cultures. The Celts celebrate four major holidays, but the one that's most frequently mentioned is called Samhain, although when you see it written, it looks like it says Samhain, pronounced Samhain. Going forward in time to when the Catholic Church spread across Europe, the church adopted a holiday that was similar to Samhain. They called it All Saints' Day or All Hallows' Day, and they celebrated it on November 1st. So then, just like we have Christmas Eve, the night before Christmas, the Catholics had All Hallows' Eve, and eventually that was shortened to the word Halloween. And the Celts were farmers, and so they relied heavily on knowing the seasons and exactly where they were in the year. And this helped them to know when to plant, when to harvest for the best possible outcome for their crops. That word, Samhain, it actually means summer's end. And it marked the end of the harvest, and it was the time for feasting, and it was really important to the Celts to know the exact time of summer's end. And today, of course, we divide the year into four seasons that are based on the spring and the fall equinoxes and the summer and the winter solstices. But before the 18th century, the seasons started on midway points that were called cross-quarter days. This is the new thing that I've learned, and it's really cool. Cross-quarter days. We know that the summer solstice is the longest day of the year, and in the northern hemisphere, that's when the North Pole points more toward the sun. And then 3 months later is the fall equinox, when the North Pole tilts at a 90-degree angle away from the sun, and that gives us nearly equal day and night. But then there's this halfway point between the summer solstice and the fall equinox, and this is known as a cross-quarter day. Now, if we were actually living really in tune with nature and the seasons, this is about the time that you would actually start to feel the change in the seasons. Samhain was known as summer's end, and it landed on a cross-quarter day. In those earlier times, the exact day probably would have moved around on the calendar, And it was likely that it was based on the phases of the moon, as most holidays and festivals were. To the Celts, the cross-quarter days were unique. They believed that it was a time of year when the barrier between our world and the underworld was weakened. So the dead would be able to slip through this barrier and return to the land of the living. Samhain was a night of magic and games and costumes, and spirits of the dead, fairies, old gods, and animal spirits who were all looking for souls to take. So the people would dress up, pretending to be one of those spirits so that the real spirits would pass them by. They carved faces in large hollowed-out turnips to confuse the spirits. They left food for their dead relatives in front of the fireplaces, and they left food on the porch to appease the evil spirits. Of course, today we know that as trick-or-treating. Samhain marked the end of the Celtic year, and they believed that it opened the window to the future. Many of the ancient Celtic communities built monuments that aligned with the motions of the cosmos. You might be familiar with some of those monuments, such as the stone circles that are spread across the British Isle and that whole region. And the most famous of these stone circles, of course, is Stonehenge. It's about 5,000 years old, which is older than the pyramids. Although there's still some speculation about the true purpose of Stonehenge, archaeologists have discovered that it marks the rising and the setting suns of the solstices, the equinoxes, and it also marks the cross-quarter days. The stars were also important to the Celts for marking the cross-quarter day of Samhain. At sunset at this time of the year, the Pleiades would have been seen on the eastern horizon at sunset, and it would rise to directly overhead at midnight. But now we're thousands of years removed from the origins of Samhain, and so today the Pleiades now peaks at midnight on November 21st. This is because the Earth has a slow wobble, so our sky is different than it was a long time ago in history. If you have access to a good backyard telescope that's capable of finding deep space objects for you, you can check out a couple of really spooky celestial objects. One is the Witch Head Nebula. It's located near the star called Rigel, which is in the Orion constellation. The shape of the cloud looks like the silhouette of a witch's face. And another cool one is called the Ghost Nebula, and that's in the constellation Cepheus. It looks like spooky ghosts are rising out of this dust cloud. And for people who live in the southern hemisphere, you can check out the Black Widow Nebula. So everyone, have a safe and happy Halloween, and enjoy the cross-quarter day of this season. Are you following Night Sky Tourist on Facebook or Instagram? If not, what are you waiting for? Every week, I share fun stuff that will inspire you. Here's a few things I've shared recently. Telling scary Halloween stories under the full moon. A recommendation for a book about Crow Indian astronomy. Information on my stargazing hikes. My favorite backyard telescope for beginners. Mythological stories about Jupiter, which is in full view right now. Constellation designs on Blackfeet Native American teepees, and so much more. You can search for Night Sky Tourist on Facebook and Instagram. Follow me and say hello when you get there. It's time for our tour across the night sky. Pause the podcast, gather everyone in your house, and I'll meet you outside under the stars. Let's start our tour tonight by finding the visible planets. I'm happy to say that two more planets have just now joined Jupiter and Saturn in the early evening night sky. And that's the red planet, or Mars, and Venus. Mars is just now peaking above the eastern horizon around 8:30 p.m., so you don't have to stay up late to see it. It's definitely more reddish colored than the stars, and it does not twinkle like some of the stars do. Jupiter is higher up in the sky now, and it's a little bit toward the south, and it's the brightest object in the night sky other than the moon. And we just talked about Jupiter in episode 49, so if you missed it, make sure you check it out. Saturn is to the west of Jupiter, and it's pretty small, about the size of most of the stars that are around it. So if you're having trouble identifying it, go ahead and use your stargazing app on your phone. Just remember to turn down the screen brightness and put it on night mode first. And also, we talked about Saturn in episode 49, so check it out. Now, Venus can also be seen during the early twilight, and it's over there by the western horizon. It's not going to be up in the sky for very long right now because it sets shortly after the sun goes down. But as the weeks go by, it's going to keep getting higher and higher in the western sky, and it'll stay up for much longer at night. So that's our lineup of visible planets in the evening sky for now. Mercury is going to come into view in the evening twilight hours right around mid-November, so make sure you stay tuned for that. The summer triangle is still clearly visible. And if you haven't learned the names of the constellations yet, that's okay. Use your stargazing app so you can find these three bright stars. The triangle is made by connecting Deneb in the constellation Cygnus, Vega in the constellation Lyra, and Altair in the constellation Aquila. This is a really fun asterism to locate. And if you're in a dark enough location, you'll notice that the stream of the Milky Way runs right through the middle of the triangle. Now look just a bit east of the summer triangle, and you're going to find the large Pegasus constellation. You'll see a box-shaped asterism, and from there you can look for the front legs and the head of the winged horse. And if you're curious about the Greek star stories associated with Pegasus, you can check it out in last year's Star Tour on episode 24. The Andromeda constellation actually shares the northeastern star of the box asterism of Pegasus. And located within the borders of Andromeda is the Andromeda Galaxy. This spiral galaxy is our nearest galactic neighbor, and we're actually on a collision course toward each other. We're going to merge into one giant galaxy in 5 to 6 billion years. It's possible to see the Andromeda Galaxy with the naked eye on a clear night from a really dark location. It looks like a small fuzzy dot if you know just where to look. And sometimes using your averted vision is the best way to see it. You can use your stargazing app to find it, or before you go outside, check out a stargazing map to find the location. You can also go online and research the object M31 in advance. Just to the east of the Andromeda constellation is the constellation Perseus. And then just east of that, rising from the northeastern horizon, is the five-sided Auriga constellation. And in dark locations, you can see the Milky Way running right behind Auriga. I'm super excited to see our winter constellations starting to peek their noses over the eastern horizon now. If you look directly east, you'll probably be able to spot Taurus. It looks almost like an upside-down V right now. And then lift your eyes farther up, west of Taurus, and you're going to see what looks like a bright but tiny Little Dipper. It's not really the Little Dipper. It's my favorite asterism, the Pleiades. The Pleiades is actually part of Taurus, but it has its own star stories and mythologies. We're going to chat more about Pleiades when it gets a little bit higher in the sky this winter. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to all the things mentioned in this episode, or visit nightskytourist.com/51.